So, may we start?
1, 2, 3, 4!
So may we start? It's time to start. My time to start.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to the Third Act Podcast bonus episode. I'm your host, Christian Estabrook. With me, as always, is Jericho Serrano.
The Third Act Podcast forever.
All right, dear listeners, we want to remind you that all of us here at the Third Act Podcast, we watch lots of films, we have lots of opinions on those films, and we're just pretentious enough to think that you care. We watch so many films that we just had to check out the latest Marvel joint, Jericho.
What's
Black
Marvel?
Panther, Wakanda Forever. That you weren't going here for Marvel, huh? Are you here for Ryan Coogler? Is that why your butt's in the seat?
Here's some money. Go see a Star Wars.
Go see a Star Wars. Oh my God. 10 out of 10 line. One of the best.
I remember. I just realized we don't even introduce Armando anymore.
I'm
filled with great sadness. But Armando will be back. We promise you that he will be back. And
we've had a couple of popular episodes, you know, popular by our metrics. I mean, what if we have a listener who doesn't even know who Armando is? I shudder at the thought. But
if you are that person, possible. If you're out there, if you exist, please tell us, because that would be something. But we've been doing this. I say the Third Act Podcast forever, hearkening to the Wakanda line here, because we've been doing this podcast for a long time, almost as long as the Marvel Cinematic Universe has been churning out these films.
You know what our podcast career here, we have been a podcast for one Ryan Coogler career.
Wow. It's insane, like when you see like someone starting out where they start and where they get to, and we're just doing the same fucking thing. Yeah. We have not advanced in our life at all. Like in some cases regressed while other people are going from very little known obscurity, making small, gritty independent films to
local independent films, Oakland, California.
Yeah. To like big, huge Marvel shit factory, whatever you want to call it, franchise building. So the original question, though, was what got my butt in the seat? What got me to go back to the theaters? Because I don't really go to the, I haven't gone to the theaters much at all. The last thing I saw in theater was Everything All at Once. Anything, Everything. What the hell is the name of that movie?
Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. My favorite film of the year. Yeah.
That. So that was back in, that was in April, right? Or something.
Yeah.
So
March, April, yeah.
That was the last thing I seen in the theater. So this is a big deal, Christian. This was what got me in. Why did I choose to go see a Marvel film in the theater? Well, combination of things. First of all, let me say I do like some of these Marvel thingies. I know this is going to be most likely skewed as Christian, the comic book guy, and Jericho, the art house goon guy, right?
Totally. I hope so. Not,
that type of thing it's almost cliche. It's predictable, right? In our personalities. But I have liked some of these. And especially, I did really like the original Black Panther from 2018. So, and then there was the passing of Chadwick Boseman, which was tragic. So there's some interest because I liked the first one. I've liked some Marvel movies, like I was really into Thor Ragnarok. I enjoyed Captain Marvel. There's been some here and there that I've liked, right? But I haven't kept up with all the TV stuff. Haven't seen Loki, WandaVision. I don't know how all this connects. I didn't see the
I'm gonna ask you some questions about
Stephen
that
Strange,
in a moment.
Stephen Strange one. The what is it called? The Multitude of Madness. I didn't see that.
His Christian name. It's Doctor Strange to you, young man.
Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Raimi, whatever it is. I didn't see that. So I'm a little bit out of touch, out of the loop with kind of what they've been doing in this. What phase are we in, Christian? Please educate me.
So this phase is, I want to talk about this. This is what I wanted to do. I wanted to kind of ground us in where we're at with Marvel, do a quick Coogler, recap, and then get into Black Panther 2 here. So this is the end of Phase 4 for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Okay. There's been 7 films and then a host of Disney Plus series. I know you haven't done any of the series, so that don't even need to ask a question here. But I'm going to name the movies. I don't know if you've seen any of these, so I'm going to run these past you real quick, okay?
Okay, all right.
Black Widow, that's what kicked this off, this phase.
I saw that. That was last year, right?
That was last year, yeah. Thumbs up, thumbs down on Black Widow.
Yeah, in the middle.
Okay. Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings.
I did see that.
You did see it?
Yeah, that was also last year.
Yeah, thumbs up.
I am a Marvel zombie. Yeah, also in the middle. It was okay.
Oh, that's too bad.
I liked parts of it, and some of it was lame, but it was all right.
The only Marvel, this is a true fact, the only Marvel film in the MCU that is rotten on Rotten Tomatoes, Eternals.
I skipped that. I did want to see that, though, because of the director.
You should watch it.
That's a blind spot. That was something that was that the end of last year that came out, or was it was early this year?
Yeah, it was like last August, September, something like that.
Okay. Yeah, it totally did vanish into the ether, though. I don't think anyone's talking about that movie.
Nobody talks. It has some defenders, but people don't talk about it. I like it. It's a weird one amongst Marvel, which. Is something I like about it. Okay, Spider-Man No Way Home.
Nope, haven't seen any of the Spider-Mans.
Wow.
The new ones.
Wild. Doctor Strange, Dr. Stephen Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Nope. I did like the first one, though. I will say I did enjoy the first one. I know you didn't like that one.
Like the first one, then yeah, you got to watch the Sam Raimi one. Get on it, dude. Oh, it's a bit scary. It's a bit spooky. Maybe I rescind that.
It's a horror movie.
It's like it's darker imagery than you would expect. Like I only took my older son to see. It's the only Marvel movie my younger son has not seen because it's a bit too scary. And I think that was a good call. There's some gross imagery in that one. So when you're ready, watch it. But okay.
All right.
Thor, Love and Thunder.
No, skip that one too.
Which sucked. That's one of my least favorite Marvel movies in the whole damn thing. So I don't think you need to catch up with that one. Skip it. Except for the scene where bloated Russell Crowe plays Zeus. That's a funny scene. Maybe watch that 10 minutes on Disney Plus, but skip the rest of it. It's not a good movie. But I think you would like Russell Crowe. Actually, you should watch that sequence. It's like in the middle of the movie, he goes to whatever Mount Olympus or whatever, they go somewhere where a bunch of gods are, and Russell Crowe's there doing, I guess, a Greek accent is what he's going for, but it's really weird, but I'm way in on it. You should watch that for TAP Awards, though, just in case.
I'm jotting this down. Watch fat Greek Russell Crowe scene.
Yes.
In
Thor 4, yeah.
Love and got it. It's on the calendar.
And that's it. And then Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. So those are the 7 movies in this phase. So you've seen...
I'm not totally out of the loop. I've seen a couple.
You've seen 3 of them, including Wakanda Forever.
Okay. Yeah. So it's something.
Yeah. No, it's something. It is something. All right. So that's where we're at there. I've seen all of those, of course. I'm not actually caught up on all of the Disney Plus shows. I will watch everything at some point, but I'm pretty heavily invested in all of the MCU stuff. So that's kind of a given. Ryan Coogler, this is his 4th film. As I mentioned, he started off back when we started off 2013 with Fruitvale Station. Then he did Creed, the Rocky franchise reboot, and then the two Black Panther movies. So now that we got four movies here for Coogler, what do you think there? I know we've talked. Did we talk about Creed on the show? It may have gotten like a recent watch. I don't think we were. Did we?
That was a big one. I was like, yeah, because it was Armando was. He's huge into the Rocky thing, so that was a big time review. I don't remember everyone's take per se. I think we all liked it.
I think we did as well, and I know we reviewed Black Panther. So we've done the whole Coogler, four for four reviews. That means I'm going to say positive all the way through. So I just wanted to get kind of a pulse check. I mean, it's franchise stuff largely now. You know, we watched his you know, smaller indie film back when Michael B. Jordan was fresher on the scene, and Coogler's first movie. So we've been talking about him since then. Now looking at it, it's like, okay, well, it's mostly big franchise fare. But what do you think? You still excited if there's a Ryan Coogler movie announced, maybe outside of Marvel, something like that? Is that something that's going to be, you know, hitting hard on the radar? Is that something that's going to pique your interest automatically? How are you feeling about Coogler these days?
I think it would pique my interest, especially if it was something outside of the Marvel complex where he was going back, maybe making a film in Oakland or something, or I don't see that happening, but something on a smaller scale, I think would probably intrigue me more, because those early films, Fruit Real Station and especially, there was a real specificity to them and a real singular kind of voice to those films. Even Creed, even though that was a little bit of a bigger budget, there was still that kind of attention to character, right? Attention to human interactions. And I think the further you get up the chain with franchise filmmaking, the less opportunities you have for that. So I don't know what it really means anymore to say, like, for instance, a new Marvel film is directed by fill in the blank, because I don't know what that means, because I don't know how much directing they do. I mean, I don't know how much sometimes when I'm watching these movies, like, the actors were even there, or if, like, the majority of these things are made inside a computer. So it's like, it's hard to really assess how good a film is, how good of a directing job someone does on one of these. I can usually tell, you know, if somebody has, you know, a visual sense or a sense of framing and blocking and all that. But, you know, when I watch these Marvel things, I feel like it's becoming increasingly more difficult to see that and to kind of differentiate one from the next. That's why I'm really interested in that Eternals, because I'm kind of curious to see Chloe Zhao, if she was even able to do anything there, because these things are so, like, the budgets are so high, the expectations are so high, the need to fill in the blanks and build the brand, so to speak, is so massive that, you know, like, any kind of idiosyncratic director, I don't really see most of those types of directors sticking. They usually leave the projects, right? Because they can't jive with it. You know, isn't that what happened to, like, Edgar Wright with Ant-Man? I mean, some of these other guys that come in,
yep,
have creative differences, quote unquote. So it seems like Coogler's been able to kind of do his thing within it, but I don't know, man. It's kind of a hard question to answer, I guess.
Yeah, well, who knows what's going to happen, but I do see just on Letterboxd, there's two, like, in development movies for Ryan Coogler. One of them about a teacher who's in a scandal because he changes the test scores for his students' work. And one of the other one is a project along with Destin Daniel Cretton that's inspired by Cretton's work with foster care and Coogler's work in juvenile detention centers, and it would be based in the Bay Area. So both of those sound like smaller, more intimate type projects. So if either one of those get made, it'll definitely be a change of pace from the bombast of Wakanda. So it would be interesting to see if one of those ends up happening. But yeah, I do think Coogler does have some reign in the MCU. And I think partly it's because Wakanda as a setting is kind of separate from a lot of what's going on in the Marvel universe. So it's able, like, I think Coogler has more license to kind of do a little bit more of what he wants, maybe than some other filmmakers would, because there's a little bit more segmenting. I mean, I guess I'll hear your take. I know Black Panther, the first one, it definitely had a lot of lead in from Civil War. It did do a little bit of world building type stuff here in the sequel. I mean, a lot of this has to do with the passing of Chadwick Boseman and thus the passing of the character of T'Challa. So it changed largely. But I don't really feel like this one is super about the bigger Marvel world as well. So I still think it's mostly kind of self-contained into this, but not being as completist as I am. I'll be interested to hear your take on that once we dig into this one, which, of course, is Black Panther Wakanda Forever, written and directed by Ryan Coogler, starring Letitia Wright, Lupita Nyong'o, and Denai Gurira. The synopsis: the people of Wakanda fight to protect their home from intervening world powers as they mourn the death of King T'Challa. So that's the setup there. That's right where we start the story, is starting off with the mourning of the death of King T'Challa. So that's kind of where we set the tone for Black Panther Wakanda Forever. And then the pace picks up, the action picks up from there. So Jericho, I'm anxious to hear what you thought of that tone setting, anxious to hear how this played, not knowing the full Marvel tapestry. And I'm also anxious to hear, back in the theater for the first time in months, how'd that go for you? What was the experience? Did you enjoy yourself watching Black Panther Wakanda Forever?
Well, it certainly felt good to be back, to have sort of like an event type of movie, even though, you know, I'm kind of hit and miss with these Marvel things, as we've talked about. There's like a comfort to it. There's something nice about going to see. If you're going to go see something, like, you know, with the sound and the screen, and in this case, not a huge crowd, because I'm careful about that. But, you know, that type of thing, you know, I'm not going to go see the Banshees of Inisherin or whatever for that experience. Like, I'm sure that's a great movie, but what I mean is that I could have an experience at home with that film just as well, I think. But for this, you know, it's part of the blockbuster cinema is experiencing it as big and loud as possible. So I think, I mean, on that level, there was a pleasure to being back in this world. And like I was saying, the first Black Panther, it was a huge event. I mean, the cultural impact of that movie is hard to really kind of put a fine point on, because it was inside the franchise building framework of what Marvel was doing, but there was a distinct perspective. A lot of credit has to go to Coogler for that, but also all his collaborators, Ruth Carter and her costumes, the design, the world building here, the look of it, the African futurism. And then you have all these new elements, but then you have the standard kind of comic book tropes also thrown in on top of that, plus the star power of Chadwick Boseman and Michael B. Jordan, who played the kind of the villain. I mean, it was just an irresistible combination, and it did feel different, even if you still had the Marvel limitations. Lots of wonky CGI battle scenes, like kind of a third act that sort of devolves into the same type of big fight stuff that all of them do, right? And so there was a little bit for me in Black Panther, as much as I liked it, it was almost like, man, this is really pushing things further. And yet, .. you still kind of have to have these things, because they make too much money. They're too big. They're too interconnected. You have to play the tropes. You have to give people what they want to some degree. But I guess what it is just the world of Wakanda itself, and the characters and the look of everything felt fresh. It felt new. But how do you make a sequel to something that had that much cultural impact, especially after the death of the star, Black Panther himself, with Boseman's passing? Is it more respectful to not even try to do this, Or does the Marvel machine forge ahead no matter what, Christian? And this is like a really difficult task for any director and team to kind of tackle. I really think there's no way they weren't going to make this film, because it's going to make tons of money regardless of what they do, regardless if Bozeman's not here anymore. It's going to make so much money and people want it, so they're going to do it. But I mean, this can be it's a whole other discussion of whether or not they should do it. I mean, you could look at it a couple of ways. You could look at it as a way to honor Bozeman's legacy. But also you can look at it as, you know, kind of cynical on Disney's part, like let's cash in, you know, regardless of the situation, we can use that. We can honor this actor and everything, but we can also make a lot of money because this movie doesn't even have to do anything new or different or be good, really. So ultimately, Christian, I have to say I was disappointed with Wakanda Forever. I guess in retrospect, it isn't all that surprising. But I think the fact that this thing works as well as it does is credit to Coogler, his talented actors, all the people that worked on this. There's still a sense of franchise appeasement, though. You were saying, you know, this kind of feels self-contained, and yeah, maybe in comparison to some of the other ones, but we do have to set up new characters, people that I know are going to have their own spin-offs, or there's a character here that I'm sure they're planning having their own movie or own TV show or something. I don't know that for a fact, but it seems true. And that feels like a franchise thing. It feels like, what is this character doing? Like, this is just a plot device character to set up for another show, right? You have more setup for the inevitable third Black Panther movie. You have to basically establish who the new Black Panther is going to be. You got to introduce that potentially interesting villain that ends up going nowhere remotely interesting. So all these things are kind of felt like things to check off. But there is an outline of a really good movie here, I think, somewhere. The cast is stacked. I mean, you got new and returning faces. I think Letitia Wright is really strong again here as this tech-savvy Shuri. Natala's brother, Black Panther's brother, sister, I mean. Angela Bassett going like full Wakanda Shakespeare queen here. I liked this actor that played the weird mutated underwater dude they set up as the villain. I kind of like this actor. This character kind of like threatens Wakanda with war because Wakanda is risking his home safety, this underwater world, which I don't have the name of whatever this place is called in front of me. You also have Ruth Carter's stunning costumes. But I think this movie is ultimately too busy, too overplotted to stay still long enough for us to appreciate all the work that went into building these worlds. Wakanda is, I think, especially lacking in specificity here. There's only like a few establishing shots of the environments. There's and some bustling inhabitants, some quick cuts. It all feels like cosmetic this time. The film just jumps around so much. And like in the first one, I felt like you got to be Wakanda a little more. You get to see the environments. You get to really feel. And I feel like Ryan Coogler is a director that's good at that. I remember in the original film, there's also scenes set in the city. It might have even been, was it in Oakland? During like the early stages of that movie, where you feel that kind of lived in authenticity, and then you kind of transpose that also into scenes in Wakanda. I didn't feel any of that here. Coogler seems really checked out when it comes to anything involving action. There are chases, there are fights here, a climactic duel between Wakanda and the underwater people, which looks like kind of like throwaway B-roll from Aquaman or something. It's just, it seems like it was all done pre-viz on a bunch of talented people worked on it, but it doesn't even seem like Coogler really cares that much about anything involving action, which is fine, which is not a big deal for me because I glaze over in those scenes anyways. But I think it affects other elements, like the characters, especially since there are, I think, too many characters in this film. Not enough screen time is given to any of them except maybe Letitia Wright and Angela Bassett. And I think both of them register in this movie, but no one else really does. The plot is clunky. There's a fascinating dichotomy, though, that the movie wants to be about, like, grief and loss, and certainly the aspect of Bozeman, like his presence hovering over everything. But there are very few small, intimate moments where we can feel this loss. There are some of scene between Letitia Wright and Angela Bassett, like out in the wilderness camping around the fire. That scene kind of comes to mind. There's a couple that really, where the movie slows down and you get some of that Coogler authenticity that I kind of missed, right? And I think those are the best moments, but there's just not enough of them. So it wants to kind of get into that. It wants to have that aspect of things, the grief, the loss, the melancholy. And the characters, especially Shuri, like emotionally go through this process of the absence of Black Panther. But it really isn't until the very end where this reaches a level of actual catharsis. And I did feel that in the final montage in a way that it worked. You know, obviously the intentions are noble and there's a love and respect, especially for Bozeman in those final moments. And I did feel that. And emotionally, I think that like final couple scenes worked for me, but the Marvel machine, it doesn't really allow for the kind of sad, melancholy, and hopeful optimism that Bozeman's legacy really deserves, I think. There's just no time for that because you got to do with all these other things. You got to set up all this other stuff. There's lots of stuff going. I mean, Julie Louise Dreyfus shows up here.
I was gonna ask,
like, what is she doing? And like, I love her, but yeah, she's obviously gonna be in a TV series or something too, right? I mean, there's no way
this is like her fourth time popping up, and even having seen everything, it's unclear to me what she's up to. So they are really like peppering her in, getting ready for whatever her deal is gonna be. But I think we're like 2 years away from that still. Even for me, I gotta say, fucking annoying. Like, well, just tell her story when we get there. I don't need Julia Louis-Dreyfus popping up for like four straight years before we get to whatever the fuck I think she's gonna lead a team, or she's gonna like take away some of the heroes and turn them into villains or something. Like, she's gonna have something big that she does at some point, but we are far away from that. So I just to jump in, and I think maybe double down on what you're saying, it's painful anytime she's on screen. Like, it feels like it shouldn't
because
be
because it feels so incongruous, and it feels like that's the stuff. And there's a lot of stuff like that in this movie, and it feels like that's the stuff that Ryan Coogler doesn't have control over. Like, it's in the contract. You have to hit these beats and get these characters in here because it's part of this larger thing, right? And they've been doing this for a long time. It works. People like that. But for me, take out all those scenes and replace them with character moments and scenes where Letitia Wright's character or some of these other characters can really deal with what's going on with Black Panther, the character, vis-a-vis Bozeman, because this movie has the potential, I think, to really go into some new places for a Marvel film, and it doesn't. It kind of hints at it. And it's just back to the usual fundamental stuff. It doesn't seem like Coogler's interested or that engaged by the franchise appeasement stuff. I think he wants to do the character stuff. And I think this movie, partially because of the script and kind of this overarching things, beats they have to hit, doesn't allow him to do it. And so he seems checked out from a, and like I said, it's hard to tell how much it is done in a computer or whatever during the action stuff, you know, so you can take that out if you want to say, oh, I can't say he's checked out from the action because maybe he's not even on set doing some of that stuff. Who knows? But at least, you know, I would have liked to spend some more time in Wakanda. And there is an interesting thing with this villain too, and this idea of two non-white kind of nations going to war with each other, because like the first one was about white colonialism and kind of Wakanda staying out of, like, kind of pulling back. And then there could be something here with that villain character, but then it just like goes to the usual places and he's angry and then they have a war and they're fighting. It's like, really, we're doing this again? It's just so disappointing. So I don't think this is a bad film. I think just think it's routine and ordinary, which for me is disappointing, because I think the first one wasn't ordinary. Although there were ordinary elements, I think it was special and different. And like most sequels, it's kind of hard to, and especially now with without Bozeman, I mean, I do credit them for even getting this thing to work at all without him. But to me, it's a whole lot of stuff happening, Christian. There's a whole lot of it's a long movie, there's lots of stuff. And a good chunk of it could have been taken out and get to the heart of it, get to what this film is actually trying to get at, which is that more melancholy kind of human material about loss and grief. But you can't go too far into that for a big blockbuster Marvel movie. You can kind of do, I mean, they kind of do in the Avengers with like the snap, right? Where all the characters are sad for a little bit. They're going to therapy, and there's a montage of that. And then it's back to, no, we can't stay there that long because you don't want to bum people out, or you don't want to, you know, I don't know. I just feel like this movie wants to have it both ways, and it doesn't, it definitely doesn't work as a spectacular big action movie type of thing. So if it's not working on that level, then it's got to work on a character level. And I don't think it really works on that level. The only things that do work are the, so, you know, here and there, some small moments, and the fact that Bozeman's kind of presence hovers and there's some emotion to that, which is kind of just automatic. You know, you kind of get that half star, one star bump just because it's like, yeah, it's sad. It sucks. Right. And they do a good job of like honoring him in that way. But the movie itself is not very good. So it's pretty predictable, I guess. And I'm expecting you to go the other way here, maybe agree with some things I'm saying, but ultimately you're going to like this thing, I feel.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to like it to some degree. I mean, come on. It's I like the Marvel movies generally. I like Ryan Coogler. I like Wakanda. I like all the characters that remain here. So yeah, there's a baseline that seems pretty safe for me on this one. But I agree with you on one of your points. Wholeheartedly, there's a lot of stuff here. There's a lot of stuff going on in Black Panther Wakanda Forever. You said it's long. To put a finer point on it, it's 2 hours and 41 minutes. It's the second longest MCU movie behind only Avengers Endgame, which cracked 3 hours. Very long movie doing a ton with, you know, so many characters, like an absurd amount of characters in that one. And so that's the only one longer than Black Panther Wakanda Forever, which I think gives you an idea of how much they're trying to do with this. And yes, there is a degree to which I agree. I can surmise there's a lack of control by Coogler in some of these things because of the apparatus he works within. Of course, I dream of What would Ryan Coogler's Black Panther 2 be if there was no notes? If it was just he writes the script. Hey, maybe it was going to be Namor when Chadwick was around. He passed. Hey, it's not the Namor time right now. I want to do something else. I want a different villain. I want a different story. Like whatever it is. Like if there was true, complete creative freedom, what would that movie be? I want to know. I'd love to see it. I love dreaming on what that could be, but unfortunately, that's not the reality that we're working in. I do think that there are large elements of this that work really well. I think Coogler, in all of his films, keeps his heart in the right place. That's like, as much as I think he has a stamp as a writer or director, I think it's the emotional through line that he's able to have remain through small independent films to bigger franchise films. I rewatched Creed actually, because my kids hadn't seen it. I wanted them to watch Creed, and it came flooding back to me just how much that movie is really about grief, about generational trauma, about finding some kind of purpose in yourself after feeling kind of forgotten or useless for so long, and the emotional connection between Rocky and Adonis Creed in that. Like, that is a palpable element of that movie. And I mean, it cooks along because Coogler knows how to shoot a sequence. And I kind of wet my lips at seeing the way he would shoot a boxing scene compared to some of the action in Black Panther, because I think it either gets away from him or it's potentially not even him. Who knows? I mean, right, we don't know these things, but
there's really, there's like nothing like in comparison to like that. I mean, I remember that scene you're talking about in Creed, like that. It was like a single take, correct?
A single take boxing match. Yeah. Where the camera is like zooming in between both of the boxers and then cutting over to Rocky and Tessa Thompson's character. And it is, it's stunning. It is like, it's such a ballet of movement of characters and movement of camera and high energy that it is like, it's like, it gives me goosebumps thinking about that sequence. Like, it is so highly skilled and also serves the story and the momentum of the film so well. Like, it's expertly done. Like, it is, I think the best like kinetic filmmaking from Coogler is in Creed, not in any of the Marvel movies. I think that's where like the movement and the energy of his works the best. Whereas the bigger spectacle, it just doesn't quite click in some of the Black Panther sequences. I'd like to let Coogler off the hook and just be like, oh, I don't know, that was Disney, that's pre-Viz stuff, but we don't really know. Maybe it is Coogler's fault. We completely have no idea. But I think a lot of the action in this is okay. The last kind of big water-based battle is not very good.
Ridiculous, yeah.
I do think they make some... I don't know. There's moments, there's like a shot, there's like shots though, right? Where it's like, oh, okay. Like all these people like jumping in slow-mo over the thing. And then it freezes for a moment. It's like, okay, this is a well-composed shot. I'm kind of into this. But then there's parts of it that feel kind of floaty and it doesn't really feel that real. And then they make really like boneheaded, I think they commit some sins in this movie. For example, you take one of the strengths of this Wakanda segment of the MCU, the actor Danai Gurira, who I think is incredible, playing Okoye. One of the highlights anytime she's on screen.
Yeah, these she's great. The Avengers movie. There's some like fish out of water stuff with her too, with her and Letitia Wright when they go to the city or they go outside of Wakanda. It's like boilerplate kind of like comic relief stuff, but it works, I think, because of her.
Yes.
And Letitia Wright. But like they bring something to material that's very creaky and very like, okay, this is kind of lame, like kind of like basic comedy here. But yeah, she's good. But yeah, like what happens with that character? Like what's okay, going yeah. on?
So there's it. I love her performance in all of these movies. She has a wit and a timing that works really well. And what I love about the Okoye character is she kicks so much ass. And you can see her do it because she has this kind of trim costume and a simple weapon. She has a staff and she has no mask or anything on her face at all. So there's all these scenes whenever she's fighting, you can see what she's doing. Like you can see this actor who works so well in the quiet scenes continue to like be captivating on screen in the action as well. And that's a huge plus because so many, like I think when the action scenes lose you is when you're like losing the characters in the the mire of like whatever CG nonsense you're seeing, right? And so many of the characters, they're like fully CG, or they're masked, and you can't really tell what's even going on with them. But that's not the case with Okoye. That's even Black Panther isn't like that, right? There's scenes with Black Panther and Killmonger like hopping around to Black Panther 1 where it's like, I don't even know what I'm looking at. Like, this is just whatever. Like, this is just nonsense. But with Okoye, like, there's a groundedness to it that's a huge strength. And what do they do in the sequel? They update her costume and put her in a full mask so she looks like the squid guy from Hellboy and you can't see her face anymore. Criminal. That's a fucking sin. Like, that's unacceptable. Like, that's like, I know it's maybe like, it sounds kind of nitpicky, but that's like a huge mistake they make in this movie, to take something that's such a clear strength amongst the elements that you have to work with in your film and make such a blunder like that. It's really fucking stupid. It's really stupid to put a mask, a goofy looking mask, on a character like Okoye. That pissed me off big time. I'm sure you agree. You got to agree with me here, right? Back me up.
Yeah. Well, it's just like emblematic of other problems. I mean, you also have, I think there's just too many characters and too many actors to juggle, and they don't really get their chance to shine. But yeah, I mean, you don't put her in a mask for one, but also like, why are you casting the really talented actor from This May Destroy You, right? What's her name?
Michaela Cole.
Yeah, she's in this.
Right.
She has nothing to do. Like, sure. Why put her, someone who's really extremely talented, funny, can do drama, like, and she's just kind of set dressing. And so it's kind of baffling. Maybe she's going to be in the next one and have more. But I don't know. It's like that kind of stuff where it's like, I'm happy to see this person on screen, but it's a nothing character.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, I'd rather see her do a nothing though than not be there at all. I guess that's maybe a pretty low bar to clear. But I mean, that's not one of the problems with any of the Black Panther movies or the Wakanda segment of the MCU, is they're lousy with great actors. And mm-hmm. That's why I still think you have some of the best performances, even though it's a huge drop off, because Black Panther 1, you had Chadwick Boseman and Michael B. Jordan. Michael B. Jordan, who I still think gave the best performance in any MCU movie ever as Killmonger, I think he crushes it. And if you remember back in the earlier Marvel days, it was like the big problem was the villains. They had none of the villains really worked or connected or like had any kind of impact. And then you have Michael B. Jordan just putting on a clinic, right? So you don't have those two characters. Both of them are killed off in the last movie or in between. And still, this is one of the best acted movies in the MCU, because you have Letitia Wright and Lupita Nyong'o and Danai Gurira. Angela Bassett, I think, I was really surprised that she was given the space to really go big. You said,
oh, like, yeah.
Shakespeare queen, yeah. Of Wakanda. Yeah, I love that.
She's huge, capital A, like, I am acting, like... You know,
yeah.
To the back row. Back,
and that
back
could sound like criticism. And... I'm here for it. I think it's
great. No.
I love the shouting, hugely emotive line reading she gives. It caught me off guard. I guess, you know, it's a much different position for her from the last movie to this one. But I don't remember. I even rewatched Black Panther right before seeing the sequel. And Bassett just does not register nearly as much in the first movie. She's so much more reserved. So to like see like the space she's given in the second one, I think was a huge plus. And I like the guy who plays a newcomer. I think this is his first performance, Tanakh Huerta as Namor. He's pretty interesting as well. And yeah, so that's one of the huge strengths. So it's like, talking about this movie as a whole, it's like, yeah, there's like massive elements of like the action storytelling that isn't working. Acting, you know, from the performance perspective, it's pretty much all pluses or huge pluses in my book. But then the movie The movie does have, I think, a pacing problem because it pings around for so many different things. Worst case scenario is when we go to Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and they also make a huge blunder, I think, in saddling her with Martin Freeman. One, because it feels kind of weird. It's like, okay, let's hang out with the two white characters now for a while, even though I like Martin Freeman and his character in the last movie, I thought worked pretty well, especially when he was bouncing off of Letitia Wright. I thought they had good chemistry. Here, it doesn't really work. I don't even know if you needed him in this movie at all.
You don't need any of those scenes. You don't. I mean, you do probably for the franchise building aspect, like the that's leading somewhere in another thing we'll see 2 years down the road. But for this movie, those scenes were meaningless, like, to me. Like, a lot of it was exposition and them explaining to a bunch of bureaucrats what's going on with Wakanda, right?
Well, I do think we need some of that because, and you mentioned that there's kind of a hint at other things. I do think there is some acknowledgement and self-awareness of the idea that there's these two massive, powerful factions of people of color who are fighting and killing each other because of the white colonialness that won't leave them the fuck alone, like which is true to life and true to history, right? Like it is the sacrifice of those people that is going to be the result of all of the other machinations from the Western world in particular. So I think that showing like what's going on with the bureaucrats and the different governments and the United Nations and whatever going into those scenes, even though they can slow things down and be exposition heavy, it is like allowing for this theme to come through of it's because of these other oppressive forces that's forcing the hand, namely of Namor, to like go too far and self-sabotage these two groups of people. But it's because of these other forces that they're even put in that position in the first place. So I think it's important. It's maybe not the most elegantly woven into the story, but I think some of that is important to get at some of the themes that I think are there in Wakanda Forever. But I mean, something that you probably could have taken out, I'm sure you think this, is Riri Williams, who is going to be Ironheart. I really like that performer. I was familiar with that character. This is her debut, but I know who that character is. I know a little bit about what her story is and all that. So I really like
seeing her on screen. This is like the tech kid that they go.
She makes an Iron Man suit.
I didn't know, because I don't know as much as you do, but I knew. Just the fact that she was in here is like, this has to be like, got to be building this for something else. Cause this seems weird. You know that?
Yeah. So that's where, and this was, I would imagine Forsen, I don't know, maybe Coogler's an Ironheart fan. She's a great character from the comics, things like that. But yes, there is going to be a Disney Plus TV series. You pegged that correctly. So this is her debut. And it does feel like a little bit out of something else. I mean, I think the idea of, this is Shuri's movie for the most part. Like, it's about her dealing with the loss and the absence of T'Challa and what that's going to mean. So I think seeing another like young woman character who's like technically brilliant, I think that interaction is somewhat important for like her character development and what she goes through emotionally over the course of this movie and some of the decisions she makes. But overall, you probably could have cut that character out of this. Mm-hmm. I like her here, so that's not one that I'm calling for, like some of the other stuff that I've complained about. I don't know. But I do think that there is, even though it's convoluted, even though it's messy, even though it's overstuffed, I do think that this movie is about the overwhelming task of processing and dealing with grief. And I was emotional in the first 3 minutes of the movie. I never cried during opening credits before, I don't think, to a movie, or not since the Star Trek reboot of 2009, whatever that was, that had a really emotional intro. And
I don't even remember what you're talking about.
Oh, it's Star Trek. The Star Trek reboot. I know that sounds silly to bring up offhand, but it's like the story of James Kirk and like what happens to his father. Chris Hemsworth sacrifices himself. It works so good. It's a wonderful cold open to that movie. Anyway, and I really like that the movie focuses on Shuri and her journey, because she is such a different character from what we've seen in her interactions before with T'Challa and others. She's so different from who T'Challa was. The idea that she would, like, her to exist and take up space in his absence seems so impossible. And how is she going to do that? And what's her motivation going to be? I thought it was such an interesting and rewarding kind of emotional journey for her, and kind of some of the dark paths she goes down or nearly goes down, the ultimate decisions that are made. I found really satisfying. I think the movie ends on an emotional note instead of a bombastic one as well, which was a smart choice. That's why I'm saying, like, Ryan Coogler, to whatever degree he has control over the storytelling here and in his whole filmography, I think he keeps true to the emotional core above everything else. And I think that's most tenuous in Black Panther Wakanda Forever, because there's so much else going on. But I still think that remains the case here, that the emotional core kind of remains important and intact and a focal point of the storytelling start to finish, even though it's a bit bumpy along the way. So I'm in. I like Black Panther Wakanda Forever. I think that's going to do it for our discussion of Black Panther Wakanda Forever for this bonus episode. Thanks everybody for hanging out. You can email us at thirdactpodcast@gmail.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you have any other thoughts or questions to send our way, suggestions for movies to cover, we're doing all sorts of random things, new releases, random pairings and themes, all that. So it's a free for all at this point. So if you have any ideas, let us know. And I don't know, we probably won't be back for Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania here on the Third Act Podcast next year. I'll be there. My butt will be in the seat. As far as Jericho, Armando, anybody else, I can't guarantee that. But that's going to do it. Thanks, everybody. Remember that the greatest act of all is the third act of the rest of our lives. Make the best of it. Have a good night.